Well, hey, y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. Now, it is possible that you can hear me. It's also possible that you can't. Well, geez. Sure hope you can. But, well, we switched over from the old system to the new. And so there are going to be glitches. But don't worry about it. It'll be all right, content-wise. And you know what? Most people listen to the show in archive format anyway. So the archive should be fine. I did remember to hit record on the backup recorder. Oh, I actually didn't remember to hit record on this one, but maybe that's for the best, because it seems like this computer's bogging down without Audition even running on it. I got Sam Broadcaster. Boy, is it fancy and complicated. Anyway. So, of all the different streams I'm on, I don't know which streams I'm on. Chat room, guys. Am I on anywhere? Let's see. I'm not on there. I might be on somewhere. I don't know which ones are working. So, I got three different APS streams. I got a stream of my own at descentradio.com, scotthorton.org/listen to find that, although you may already be listening to it. And then one from Daily Paul Radio. So, I don't know if any of them are live or not. It seems like some of them, maybe. I guess, you know what I'll do? I can't get a hold of the good folks at Daily Paul, but I'm going to email my friend over at APS Radio News and see whether he can hear me. All right, well, whatever. You know what? I don't even usually have to try to not get upset about technical difficulties. Because that's just how it is with live radio. Even at multi-zillion dollar radio stations, sometimes they're just dead air for 45 minutes until they can get the engineer down there to figure out what in the hell is going wrong and fix it. Happens to everybody sometimes. So, not too worried there. We'll see how the rest of the show goes. I admit also, let's see, they say number 6 is streaming dead air. I'm on Descent Radio. Well, that's good. Daily Paul is dead air. I don't know about APS. I sent an email to APS. Well, here, let me go to my own stream and post that. Fitzy can hear me on dead air. That's good. I mean, on Descent. Where am I? Goddamn. Here. All right. Well, you know what? Sometimes radio shows are disjointed messes. You know what? Trevor Tim's going to be on the show today. He's great on, well, everything that I'm interested in him, his journalism about. You know, he may be, you know, horrible in that he supports Medicaid or something like that, but I don't care about that. He's great on Fourth Amendment stuff and on technical NSA stuff and everything. He's going to be on the show, and I got a ton of news to get to. Bear with me for just a minute, and we're going to get to a ton of news, and then I hope to also take your calls, too, if you guys are interested in doing some phone calls today on the show. I was told that I suck at taking calls, and the guy assumed, and it was fair enough, he assumed it's because I'm such a jerk. But the reality is, it's because I don't wear headphones. I use monitors in the back of the room. Because the headphones, they make my ears hurt. And I don't want to go deaf. But for you guys, I will wear headphones so that when you're trying to have a conversation with me, I can hear what you say. I know I talk over my guests for the very same reason sometimes, too. But you know what? I hate wearing headphones. I know, radio guy hates wearing headphones. But Scott, you're wearing headphones in the picture. Yeah, because that's at KPFK, where they didn't have any monitors. There's no choice but wear the headphones. Anyway, for you guys, I will wear the headphones so that I will be able to hear you participating in phone calls on the air with me if you're interested in doing that. In fact, you guys, if you want, you can go ahead and start lining them up on there. The call-in number is 512-271-4836. 512-271-4836. At least go ahead and, you know, take a note. 512-271-4836 if you want to call the show. All right, let me tweet. I got a tweet to the people. My God. Let's see. The stream here works. That's how to keep it nice and simple. It's not always the best idea to tweet and read out loud your tweet as you type it. You know, while you're hosting a show. But that's all right. I'm done. Get that fixed up for you. So, well, anyway, it's the show. You can hear me at scotthorton.org/listen. Tell your friends. On Descent. You can hear it. All right. Yesterday, I got an old show from a couple days ago on Descent. Assumed I took the day off. Dope! I'm live on Anomaly. That's good. Anomalyradio.com. Thanks very much to my good friend Smiles Lewis. Yes, indeed. All right. I'm on anomalyradio.com. I'm on scotthorton.org/listen. And I'm not, as of this moment, on Daily Paul. And I'm waiting to hear back. Hey, somebody in the chat room, would you check APSradionews.com for me? APSradionews.com. I should be live on there, but I don't know if I am or not. The thing is, I got all these damn different encoders going at the same time. Some of them are bouncing and some of them are going. You know what? It looks like only one of them is going. But I can't really tell just by looking at it because it's not as self-explanatory as the Winamp plugin. I'll put it that way. And I don't know which one is which. Yeah, whatever. Here in a minute, some music should play. And then some commercials. We'll see if that part of the show works. Tain't always perfect, but we'll see how it goes. All right, and then at some point we'll probably hear back from our friends at the Daily Paul, see if we can get that fixed up. And again, Trevor Tim is going to be on the show. All right, so the big news is that the CIA and or the Joint Special Operations Command, don't know, have killed 68 people, supposedly, maybe more, maybe a little less, I don't know. As the U.S. drone strikes on Yemen enter their third day, writes Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Death toll mounts, but victims remain unnamed. A barrage of U.S. drone strikes across Yemen's south and east has entered its third day today and shows no sign of slowing down as the latest U.S. attacks targeted the Shabwa province. With so many of the attacks occurring against remote villages in the hills of Yemen's rural interior, the death toll is difficult to ascertain, but at least 68 are believed to be dead over the past 3 days. Yemeni officials say the strikes are targeting the top leader of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and they have high hopes they may kill one such leader. They can't confirm anything of the sort so far. Indeed, while all of the official statements from Yemen have termed the slain militants, or at the very least, suspects, not a single person has been identified at all so far officially, and many civilians were confirmed among the slain on Saturday. So, there you go. Only music on the APS radio news site. Well, that's too bad. Everything's broken. Many things are broken. The breaking has occurred to the things that are supposed to be whole. Ah, well, I'm not going to be upset. I'm just going to carry on. At least the guys in the chat room can hear me. Since the guys in the chat room can read what each other write to each other about, you know, which streams work or not. All right. So, yeah, the war in Yemen. Now, it used to be there was no Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. But then I think what happened was some of the Al-Qaeda guys from the Afghan war went home. And then the Americans started chasing them around with drone bombs. And the more the Americans chased them around with drone bombs, the more people joined up their movement. Isn't that odd? And you can just take even a cursory look, an in-depth study will prove to you the very same thing. But even a cursory study of the American drone war in Yemen will show you over and over and over again stories of innocent people killed. And not only innocent people, but people who, on another day, the Americans might have tried to recruit to work for them. Were killed and driving people who had no dog in the fight whatsoever into the Al-Qaeda camp. As Panetta put it to David Gregory, these are the tools we have and this is what we'll continue to do. Kill more innocent people and make more enemies for innocent Americans. Alright, that just sounds absolutely terrible. And I don't know how to fix the settings, because I ain't the one who set them that way. Maybe I can find how to fix the settings here. Let me see. If I click that, is that it? If I go like that, how's that sound? I can't tell which is worse. All right, well, something's going terribly wrong with the audio quality on these bumpers and spots, guys, and I'm not sure how to fix it myself. Other than go back in time and change everything. So I don't think I can do that. I mean, I could try, I guess. More likely what I'm going to do is just fake it. And tell you who my sponsors are. The Future Freedom Foundation. The Council for the National Interest. Number 6 says, you have to take the mixer off the bathroom acoustics setting. I know. You know, I didn't think that you guys would notice if I brought the mic into the bathroom. Okay, you caught me. No, all right. The 10th Amendment Center. The Future Freedom Foundation. CashIntoCoins.com, which is now ExpressCoin.com, actually. WallStreetWindow.com and the great book The War State by Michael Swanson, Liberty Stickers and TheBumperSticker.com, of course, and yeah, Go-Kart Galaxy and Web Dev Geeks and My Heroes Think, statues of Rothbard, Brown, Paul, and soon Carlin. Anyway, Hazlitt, I think. Okay, so those are my sponsors, and I'm going to go ahead and just I'll do those very weak live reads for you. Oh, you know what? Go to Listen and Think Audio and get the audio book of The War State by way of Listen and Think Audio and get it from audibletrial.com/Scott and then blam, trifecta. You make a tiny little bit of money for me and a tiny little bit of money for Mike and a tiny little bit of money for Derek Sheriff over there at Listen and Think Audio who has this great project to try to make all libertarian audiobooks. And get them out there to the world so that, you know, people care about individual rights more. And so I just think, isn't that a great project? You got Listen and Think Audio, put together the audio book of The War State, which you can get for free. You can get any book for free, but you can get this particular audiobook for free with your trial if you just go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. And also, by the way, whenever you shop at Amazon.com, which I think, I hope you know, sells everything, not just books, everything at Amazon.com. If you go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon first, or just click the links on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org, then I get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale, not yours. And so it's not like your price is being raised so that you can tip me. It comes from their end of the deal. So that's something that you can always do, especially if you shop often at Amazon.com. I sure do appreciate that. So far, it's been worth an extra couple of hundred bucks a month, which means, yeah, food to eat. and a place to live. You know, it's great. It's really great. So thank you, everybody who's been participating in that project. Amazon.com. ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Okay, so that's it for ads. And now I will move on with the news. And the news will be... I'm not sure why that audio sounds so bad. It might could have been something I've done. You know what? Well, it's not playing now. Oh, wait. Yeah, it is. Hang on a second. What if I plug this in here? I'm going to turn this up. Does that still sound all weird, guys? It does, right? Sound like SLF playing in the... Isn't that where the Pointer Sisters recorded Jump? In a ladies' bathroom somewhere? They got had the tile in there and all that. Was it Jump? Yes, I was born in the mid-late 70s. So, yeah. All right. I guess we'll see. Yeah, chat room guy says, yeah, still sounds terrible. Okay. Thank you, number six. I appreciate that. Still sounds terrible. So it's not the board. It's not the board. It's the software somewhere. All right. Yeah, everybody's, that's fine. All right, so I'm Scott Horton, and the show is broken today. Yes, it's true. I can't seem to connect to APSRadioNews.com, and I cannot seem to connect to Daily Paul Radio, which, I think is putting out dead air. That could be a travesty. I would hate to find out that that's the case. But I'm on Anomaly Radio, and I'm on DescentRadio.com, and that's pretty goddamn good right there. I'll take it. Hi, Anomaly folks. How are you guys doing? Good, good. All right, so, Yemen. I don't know. I mean, what can you say, man? It's like that piece that Ralph Nader wrote the other day, and I'm not always the biggest fan of Ralph Nader, although he does have principle and some good ones, along with his bad ones. But, I mean, and I guess his thing was about Iraq. He had more to say about Iraq. Maybe he hadn't been keeping up on Yemen news and didn't want to go too far off his own reservation there. But anyway, his comparison was the Boston bombing. And, you know, I'm not playing down all the victimhood and the heroics and the everything else that were involved in that situation. And the importance that the people of Boston, that the people of America put on what happened there that day. You know, regardless of what all warnings from the Russians, the FBI ignored, et cetera, et cetera. But just the event itself, the emotional responses from it and whatever, it's all fair. I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking it at all. And I think Ralph Nader was not knocking it at all either. He's pointing at Iraq. I'll point at Yemen. Barack Obama does Boston bombings all the time. That exact same type of thing. Oh my God, a giant explosion went off where a bunch of civilians were. Oh my God, did you hear about what happened in Boston? No, what happened? There was a bombing at the Boston Marathon. Oh my God, are you kidding me? Yeah, ball bearings ripped everybody's legs off and all this. Oh my God. What did the FBI know and when did they know it? Oh, I don't know. They're not saying. Biggest deal in the world, right? I mean, how horrible is that to happen? But the Democrats launch Hellfire missiles at women and children, at innocent civilians, hell, at fighting-aged males in Yemen all the time. And by what ridiculous rules of racism and or nationalism do they have any less right than Americans to their own life, their own liberty, their own right, their own ownership of themselves? What right, what authority does America have to take it from them? Just because they live somewhere, wherever Yemen happens to be. You ever heard of Yemen before? Does anybody in America even know where Yemen is? Well, the further away it is, the easier it is to dehumanize them, the easier it is to bomb them. In fact, I'm trying to remember now the context. Oh, I know what it was. They're pulling bodies out of the Korean Oh no, it wasn't. It was the Border article. They're talking about finding bodies of Mexican migrants dying out in the desert of dehydration, and the Vietnam veterans in the one of the Vietnam veterans in the Border Patrol is saying, "Well, I learned in Vietnam the kind of mental trick of dehumanizing them, calling them a different name, and it wasn't a racist name. It was a bureaucratic name. It was, you know, expired, you know, whatever." EHIs, expired human individuals, or whatever, but you give them a nickname, give them an acronym, give them a something, and then it's easier to deal with their rotting, stinking corpses. I mean, my God, if they're humans, then you gotta stop and cry and pray and freak out, man, right? Some poor lady dead in the desert, but you can't do that every day if that's your job, is scooping up their corpses, right? So you figure out a way to just dehumanize them a little bit, to separate them from what it means to be human to you. And of course, it's always much easier to do that with people who speak a different language than you, look different than you, live far away from you, and the farther away, the better. The easier it is to think of Yemenis as just gooks, go ahead and kill them. Who cares? And here's the thing about that. Like Ron Paul tried to explain during all those Republican debates, if we ignore the consequences, the possibility of real consequences to our government's malevolent foreign policies, then we do that at our own risk. Never even mind the dead Yemenis. Eventually they are going to succeed in blowing up an airplane over a major American city. At some point, they are going to succeed in blowing up Times Square or a baseball game or whatever it was. You know, Tsarnaev Jr. there, the younger brother, has said, according to the sources, I don't know if this is 100% true or not, but at least the story is that he said this is about Iraq and Afghanistan and the American war on Muslims. And that, you know, recruited by Chechen or Dagestanian freedom fighters or whoever they are, that, you know, just like Faisal Shahzad, just like Mohammed Atta, they're recognized as people who can get back behind the lines of the West. You have a German passport? You have an American passport? You could be useful. And so you look at the consequences of the way that this all plays out, too, because of the American people going along with the media and the government's, you know, established ignorance on this. They want us to ignore that it's empire that causes blowback, that causes terrorism against us in the first place, since before September 11th and since then, too. What we have is a complete, almost unimaginable totalitarian police state at the Boston bombing. All the cops. I mean, just that alone, the presence of the police and the militarization and, you know, God knows what all biometrics and high-tech surveillance, this, that, and the other thing. And the thing is, yeah, Boston strong. The people of Boston with the state as their overwhelming security force were able to go ahead and have their race anyway this year. But is that how we, the American people, want to live forever? Because we don't have to live like this forever. Terrorists don't come and attack America because of how good we are and because all the harm we haven't done to them yet. It's the other way around. So if you'd like to run your race in peace, give them peace. Nah, you know what? I'm not going to play that. That's terrible, man. I thought maybe I'd get away with playing that, but I'm not going to play it. And you know what happened? I forgot. That was how bad it was going to sound. All right. Here's a spot for you. If it'll play. If that file's even in the right place. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for thebumpersticker.com. I created it, but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. Thebumpersticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. Thebumpersticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. And tell them you heard it here. All right. Huh. Man, that's weird. I don't know who that is or what that means exactly. All right. Okay. So, yeah, I think that the problem with APS was on my end. Charlie, if you're listening now, it wasn't you. It was me, man. I've been having problems all morning over here. So, okay, good. Well, supposedly I am, apparently... I am connected now at APS Radio News. No problem at all. I'm pretty sure, again, the fault was mine there. So certainly don't worry about that. And thanks again to Charlie for hosting the show live, as he does there, APSRadioNews.com. All right, now, yeah, Yemen and terrorism. And I don't mean give peace to actual terrorists who would come to attack us. I mean... stop slaughtering Afghans, Iraqis, Syrians, Libyans, etc., and terrorism will dry up. You know, Tsarnaev, the older brother, he may have been a loser. He may have had his problems, and he may have wanted to kill some people. But the reason that he did the attack the way he did the attack was political. And it wasn't about America, you know, righteously defending itself from aggression. No. I mean, you know what? If under some complete hypothetical, the American people actually had to wage war against a foreign army in order to repel unprovoked aggression against us, or I guess certainly, you know, major disproportionate aggression against us, and then that continued to anger people and motivate people to join up that army and whatever, well, those would just be the breaks, I guess. But in this case, no, America started it. In this case, it was George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton and George Bush Jr. who blockaded and starved and bombed Iraq from 1992 through 2001. From 1990 through 2001. And from bases in Saudi Arabia, all while supporting Israel in their permanent occupations of the civilians of Palestine and southern Lebanon, and their mass murders of innocents in those occupations. And so that was what caused the 9/11 attacks. That was what caused the entire Al-Qaeda war against America, starting with the assassination of Rabbi Kane, and then the first World Trade Center attack, and then the plot against the Lincoln and Holland tunnels in the UN building, and then the there was a National Guard base. I always screwed this up and thought it was a Saudi Arabian embassy. It was a Saudi Arabian National Guard base where Americans were training Saudis that got bombed in 95, then Khobar Towers in 96, then the Africa embassies in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Nairobi, Kenya in 98, and then an attempted attack on the coal in 99, but the dinghy sunk because they had too much explosives on board, and then the attack on the coal in 2000, and then September 11th. It was that was all not justified, but in fact a reaction to American foreign policy. In fact, you know, it's kind of hard to argue that the attack on the coal, or that the coal itself, isn't a military target. It's not terrorism, really. That's an act of war by a stateless group, though, so, you know. It's a military target. I'm not saying it's okay to kill those people, but I'm saying it's not the same thing as killing civilians. But the rest of those are civilian targets, full of collateral damage by the thousands. And then that becomes the excuse for now waging war for 13 more years since, and creating that many more terrorists. And you know what? I should just do the whole show about this from now on, man. Every day, all day, about Patrick Cockburn's work in The Independent recently, as well as it's republished at UNZ.com, UNZ.com, about the rise of the new generation of Al-Qaeda. And these are veterans of the Iraq War, really, and now they're even younger, newer recruits. As I reported to you back, you know, what, 8, 9, 10 years ago, the jihadis infiltrating, well, 9 years ago anyway, 8 and 9 years ago, the jihadis going to Iraq, traveling to Iraq from Saudi Arabia, Libya, Syria, Jordan to fight the Americans. These were virtually all young, brand new recruits. The, you know, bin Laden generation, the Zawahiri generation of Islamic fighters from the 1980s, they served as kind of the core group of, you know, older bosses, not the fighters. And there were Israeli and Saudi studies in 2005 that reported that the only role of the former, you know, Reaganite era Mujahideen from Afghanistan was in the coordination, the logistics, the branding, and the organization and the vision and the whatever. But the who was going to travel to Iraq to fight, those were all young new guys, thousands of them. And now, of course, your government was lying right to your face in pretending for years on end that the entire Sunni-based insurgency in Iraq was made up of these foreign fighter suicide bomber types. When in fact, when they were being honest, they would admit it was really only 2 or 3 percentage points of it. It was really a broad-based Sunni insurgency there because they were the 20% minority being thrown out of power, well, a little bit more than that, 25 maybe, being thrown out of power there by the Americans, the Iranians, and the Shiite Arabs there. And so they had a hell of a lot to fight for, everything to fight for. But the Al-Qaeda guys that all traveled there, and there were some Iraqis who joined up with Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and then after he was killed, they changed the name of it to the Islamic State of Iraq. It still is thousands of these guys, and how many do you need? A few thousand is way more than, well, sure is 10 times as many as bin Laden ever had back in 2001. When the attack on America happened in 2001, there were only 200 or 300 of these guys. And the Air Force and the CIA killed almost all of them with their laser pointers and daisy cutters. It was bin Laden and a couple of dozen others escaped with him into Pakistan. Well, you know, Rumsfeld had them surrounded on 3 sides. Oh, no, not Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld didn't do anything. George Tenet had him surrounded on 3 sides. Rumsfeld refused to help. But anyway, it was only a couple dozen who escaped Pakistan, and now it's thousands, at least thousands of these guys, and especially because of Barack Obama's foreign policy, which is, on this note, as bad as Bush's. I mean, Bush was really, in the entire Iraq War, he was fighting for the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran and the Ayatollah Sistani, his best buddy in southern Iraq, and for the Iraqi Shiite Arabs against the Sunni Arabs and the Saudis and their friends. But he gave the entire Anbar province and the towns of Fallujah and Mosul and Tikrit and all of the western desert and all of that land, he turned it into lawless Sunni jihadistan, where, as we've seen, the so-called awakening was unable to keep the jihadists down for more than a little while. The Americans bribed, well, and I guess, you know, the tribes, the tribal leaders in Sunni Iraq, they found it useful to go ahead and allow these guys to come back into play to a degree as well, because they are useful fighters, I guess, as long as they're willing to do what they're told. And so, you know, Iraq is back at war, even to this day. I mean, really, the war has raged on somewhat a lower level during the awakening. But that entire province, that entire part of Sunni Arab Iraq, you know, Sunni majority, it's not like it was completely pure or whatever, but that part, because of George W. Bush, for 11 years now, has been lawless jihadistan, basically where thousands of young men from around the Middle East have gone to train and to join up with these Zarqawiite, bin Ladenite groups. And then Barack Obama goes ahead and wages war directly on these groups' behalf in Libya and in Syria. And you could say, and I guess I'd concede, that Obama has sort of half backed down and has not, you know, made sure that Al-Qaeda has won in Syria the way he made sure they won in Libya. But still, I mean, there never was an al-Nusra front. There never was an Islamic State of Iraq and Syria like there is now. Before, it was the Muslim Brotherhood. And there, I guess Syrian Muslim Brotherhood is has a reputation of being more radical and more outlawed than the Egyptian branch. But still, those guys were, you know, you would think the moderates compared to the suicide bomber, heart-eating, you know, prisoner beheaders. These guys who go and deliberately blow up schools full of women and children in Damascus every chance they get. And Obama has armed them. And this whole myth all along that, well, we're trying to just back the moderates and not the jihadists, is just not true. I mean, maybe they tried to do that, but in practice it's not true. And they would have, could have, should have known all along that it couldn't be. As we've talked about all along on this show, moderates don't fight in volunteer jihads. Extremists do. Now, you could get a moderate to just join up the army, which is a very middle-of-the-road acceptable thing to do in most countries on Earth. But that's not the same thing, really, as joining up a suicide bomber brigade in a holy war on the ground that's not officially backed by foreign states. It has no generals and ranks. It's just a volunteer jihad. So-called moderates, meaning people who, I guess, presumably don't cut people's heads off after they capture them. And, like George Bush ordered to be done to, or supposedly ordered Kofor Black to cut bin Laden's head off. It's a barbaric thing when they do it. It's perfectly legit in Western civilization, though, you understand. But anyway, so-called moderates, what that really means is locals, or at least people who can pass for locals on the CIA payroll, most of them who are big and fat and have been living in Langley, Virginia for the last 20 years or something, those guys don't fight. Why would they? They get paid to not fight. They're going to go out there and get dead? All they do is basically serve as the middlemen, and this is true all along and has been since 2011, that the American arms being shipped from Libya and from God knows where all else, from Eastern Europe, from the weapon stocks of the Saudis and Qataris and the Turks, all coordinated by the CIA, all these weapons have been going into the hands of jihadi stormtrooper death squads. These people who have, you know, ransacked, every time they go to a village that's majority Shiite or majority Christian, they commit atrocities. I mean, assuming that the people hadn't already fled in terror first. You wonder why a majority of the people of Syria still support Assad. It's because their enemies are suicide bomber, prisoner beheader, cannibals. John McCain goes to pose with the Northern Storm Brigade. Says they're moderates. And yet the Northern Storm Brigade is on video telling Time Magazine, yeah, we're veterans of the Iraq War. Go look it up. It's on Google. Northern Storm Brigade, Time Magazine. Yeah, we're veterans of the Iraq War where we fought and killed Americans, they say. And these are the same guys who were responsible for the mass kidnapping. Maybe not the exact men in the picture, although I think it's supposedly at least one of them in the picture, but still, their same group is responsible for the mass kidnapping of Shiite pilgrims. Not fighters pretending to be pilgrims, actual just civilian, religious civilian pilgrims from Lebanon who went to Syria. And then the other major moderate faction that they've been claiming is moderate enough to arm and back this whole time is the Al-Farouq Brigade. Well, the Al-Farouq Brigade, it's their leader who's on film eating a man's heart. A defeated Syrian soldiers. Although it's true that Iran and Syria, Iraq and Iran are in on this. They're backing Assad's side. America is backing Nouri al-Maliki in Baghdad, who is also backed by the Iranians and who is helping the Iranians back Assad in Syria. At the same time, we're backing him in his war against the Sunni insurgency in Iraq. The very same Sunni insurgency in Iraq that now goes by the name the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Be unbelievable, except that, yeah, you know how these Democrats and Republicans are. They're completely out of their minds. They're out of their minds. Patrick Coburn has done a 5-part series now at UNS.com about the rise of the new generation of Al-Qaeda. Barack Obama has spread them from Iraq into Syria, into Libya, into Mali, into Algeria, Morocco. And they claim down into Nigeria, although I don't know that Boko Haram really has a thing to do with any of these other jihads. I guess they claim that they've shaken hands with Tuaregs, you know, right? That's all it takes, right? Links. Links. We have intelligence that indicates that one guy in Boko Haram once shook hands with a guy from Algeria, who helped some Libyans from Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb seize the oil field there. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb guys who were once filmed doing jumping jacks and training on monkey bars with some Al-Shabaab fighters from George Bush and Barack Obama's genocidal war in Syria. That has killed at least 500,000 people since 2006. And some of those very same people who were part of that same group, why we heard intelligence from an allied friendly state of ours that they once could have been filmed if somebody with a camera had been there shaking hands with a guy from Yemen who had been wounded in the American war in Afghanistan. And so you see, Boko Haram. We got to use the Joint Special Operations Command now to invade Nigeria. Jumping jacks, handshakes, links. And to, you know, to the degree that they want to use this as an excuse to intervene further, I might concede that in some cases they're right, where you can see, you know, the war in Mali as direct blowback from the jihadis they empowered in Libya moving on to Mali, but never let them invoke these truths to the degree that they're true as an excuse to intervene further. Well, like happened in Mali, although thankfully they were at least able to get the French to do the majority of the heavy lifting on that one instead of American forces. Not that it's any better for the people of Mali, just for us, you understand. Here's Patrick Coburn again at UNS.com, a piece from The Guardian. From The Independent. Foreign suicide bombers kill thousands and bring Iraq back to the brink of civil war. All blowback from America's war there. And then, now there are reports, and I don't know who knows. I should have called Gareth about this. There are reports of chlorine gas attacks now in Syria, but I think we've all learned at least the hard way, if not the easy way, by now, that you can't trust them. And that what looks like an obvious Syrian government attack is just as obvious, or more likely to be, I guess is the way to say it, a rebel attack on their own supporters in order that they can cry boo-hoo and figure out a way to bring Assad down. And now I understand that from their point of view, nothing more important than bringing down Assad, and they're willing to do anything to get the Americans to bomb Assad. And they may yet succeed. And at the same time, this could have been the Syrian government that did this. Not that that would be a good enough excuse to cause American intervention. you know, morally speaking, or to you and me, but it sure as hell might be good enough for the people in power. You see, you vowed to destroy all your stocks and to give it all up in order to avoid getting bombed last summer, and now look at you, attacking people with chlorine. That could be a good enough excuse for war for people in D.C. But, you know, I guess we'll see what we see. Oh, yeah, and by the way, I did have a link here about Libya. Where the hell is my Libya link? Yeah, man, Black Agenda Report has done some of the best work in America on this story. Because it just doesn't fit with the narrative about who Barack Obama is and what his foreign policy is about. And the truth is that this president has waged a war for jihadists in Libya who then turned right around and waged, or still waging, anti-black pogroms. I guess especially in the city of Misrata, but also elsewhere. There's very little coverage of this. And it's been a while, I guess, even since the Black Agenda Report is covered, as best I can tell here. But there have been major pogroms against black Africans in Libya. Of course, I was trying to mention this on the show the other day, right, about how, you know, mostly they're migrant workers, but they were categorized as all mercs working for Gaddafi, because it was said that Gaddafi, in fact, it was true that Gaddafi had hired black Africans, perhaps, I guess, Nigerians, but also Tuaregs to run his... basically had his own little Gestapo, not much of an army. He was afraid if he had an army, it might depose him. So he basically had his own little private security force of mercenaries. And then since there were a lot of blacks in his mercenary force, oh, well, then that's all you need to know then. Blacks are all mercenaries who work for Gaddafi, went the rumor, went the slogan that couldn't possibly be true, and then became the basis for anti-black pogroms as... It was Russian news, filmed it, but they didn't fake it. There's no way they could have, and nobody challenged the authenticity of it. They just ignored it. I believe human rights groups and others have covered this, but here RT had the footage of blacks being kept as prisoners in the, I don't know if it was in Tripoli or where it was, but in the zoo. Their hands and ankles bound. Libyan flags down their throats. Eat the flag, you dog. Patience, you dog. Patience. God is great, screams a voice off camera in the video, which is also on LiveLeak.com. This is part of Barack Obama's legacy, and sticking your fingers in your ears, liberals, and, you know, singing Mary Had a Little Lamb and la 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 la, I can't hear you, I can't hear you, doesn't make it not true. Barack Obama is the Imperial Grand Wizard Dragon of the Libyan Ku Klux Klan. You can't do a damn thing about that except stop loving him. Except perhaps insist that he be tried and imprisoned. Oh, I know. Republicans are worse. They're horrible, the Republicans. But that's all we need to know, right? So Barack Obama can be the Imperial Grand Wizard Dragon of the Libyan Ku Klux Klan if he wants, can he? And then, of course, the whole Benghazi scandal. Pretty obvious at the time. Plenty of indications all over the place. Was really about gun running. And a brilliant scheme by David Petraeus. You know, the guy that gave the insurgents of Mosul 100,000 AK-47s back in 2004. The guy who won the surge for Iran in Iraq. Who did nothing but fail miserably in Afghanistan. The biggest loser ever to be hailed an American hero in the history of American loser heroes ever. It's absolutely unbelievable. The public relations coup d'etat this guy has pulled off. Just like Bill Clinton never did anything wrong except that one little human frailty that, you know, Republicans overlook. Because what do Republicans care about adultery or anything like that, you know? Not when it's Petraeus. It can be a real big deal under Clinton, I guess, but that's the worst thing either of them ever did. Please don't be so judgmental. Well, actually, what was going on was Petraeus got the brilliant idea that he would hire Al-Qaeda to wage a regime change in Libya. And then he would hire Al-Qaeda again to wage a regime change in Syria. And then he set up an entire rat line, as the CIA guys called it, as was reported by Fox News. Shrug. Admit it. As was reported by the Daily Telegraph, as was reported by the Sunday Times in London, they were running guns from Gaddafi's war stocks through Benghazi, where the CIA outnumbered the State Department employees by 15 to 1, or whatever the proportion was, I forget. And they were funneling these weapons to Syria. Well, at the same time, I think, trying to filter out the shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles, which they were terrified would end up taking out Israeli or European aircraft. Civilian aircraft. But otherwise, they were funneling all these weapons to Libya. To Syria from Libya. Rand Paul got in a fight with Hillary Clinton about it, where she pretended, I have no idea what you might be referring to. When it was in the London Times that, yeah, a ship full of weapons from Libya has arrived at this port in Turkey, where the weapons are to be all handed off to the insurgents, the Sunni Islamist rebels in Syria, and they're fighting about who gets them, the Muslim Brotherhood or the al-Nusra Front. It's right there in the London Times. Well, like that lady was faking it. She was standing there at the port in Turkey reporting it, writing it down, and sending it back home to her editors where it appeared. It wasn't like Israeli officials say. The lady was reporting from the damned port in Turkey. Ship full of guns. I'm looking at them. And then you got to love the Republicans, because they love war so much, they don't want to turn against a war against Gaddafi. Ronald Reagan bombed Gaddafi. Bombing Gaddafi is good. John McCain said, and Lindsey Graham, you know, every conservative's heroes, said that war in Syria or war in Libya would be a grand idea, would be wonderful. So they all try to focus on the fact that Hillary Clinton did not provide heavy enough security for our wonderful, selfless public servants, Ambassador Stevens and his cohorts there that were killed on September 11th, 2012. That's all they want to talk about. One day when the whole damn war was fought for the jihadists. Yeah, you might be a victim of brainwashing by political hacks if you think the problem with the Libya war is that on one day Hillary didn't have enough security, or that the Pentagon didn't react, or the CIA didn't react fast enough to save our heroes there who were busy funneling guns to Zawahiri's men. That's right, Ambassador Stevens was guilty of high treason. It should have been an American jury that sentenced him for his capital crimes, and not a local mob of self-identified Zawahiri lovers in Benghazi, but still. Boo-hoo for Ambassador Stevens. And again, don't get me wrong, I'm not that kind of idiot conspiracy theorist where I'm saying that Panetta, Clinton, Petraeus, Obama are servants of Zawahiri. It's just that they think that they can make Zawahiri's men their servants. And in fact, they're right. It's just that they're stupid. Because in fact, America, the nation's, the country's interests do not intersect with Ayman al-Zawahiri's at all. It is not in the American people's interests to overthrow Gaddafi for Zawahiri. It is not in the American people's interest to overthrow Bashar al-Assad for Zawahiri, or Saddam Hussein for Zawahiri and the Ayatollah Khomeini at the same time, and Ariel Sharon. Don't want to leave him out. It is in the Empire's interest, they think. It is in Israel's interest, they think, to pursue these regime changes. So, they believe that they are using these Al-Qaeda guys. But who's zooming who, man? Now that they've, since the reaction to September 11th, since the invasion of Iraq, even, since they have raised an entire new generation of thousands of these kooks across North Africa and into the Levant and the, you know, Mesopotamia, the center of Arabian culture, Arabic culture, one of the major centers. What does that mean for the future of the American people? That means more war. That means decades of war, because it means that Boston-type attacks and worse are going to keep happening. And then it means that, I guess, we're going to keep on the same ridiculous policy of letting our government continue pretending history began the day of the last attack. And every bit of whatever their reaction is has to be legitimate. Or else why would they be doing it? And so more American civilians are going to die. And then more innocent civilians overseas are going to die from the reactions thereto. And of course, where's the FBI going to be the next time real Al-Qaeda is here planning on blowing up a baseball game or some kind of madness? Why, they're going to be busy entrapping some idiot in your neighborhood into saying he loves Osama, when actually he's just some nobody doing nothing and harming no one. Because there's a lot of money in that. There's a lot of overtime in that. There's a lot of promotions for FBI pigs, bosses in that. And so, in fact, somebody, maybe Trevor Aronson, should go back and double check how many fake terror busts, how many entrapment jobs were being put on by the FBI or were, you know, in progress at the time of the Boston attack. I bet it's somewhere around a half dozen or so, at least. All right, well, anyway. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a couple little spots here so I can run and go get a Dr. Pepper from the other room. And then I got a ton more news to cover and some complaints to complain. And then Trevor Tim is going to be on the show. And Trevor Tim is great. So here's some of that. This thing will work right. Please.
Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the Journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Now, you know they publish great articles at fff.org every day, but their best stuff goes in The Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online, and I got a new one coming out in September in there, U.S. Responsible for Somalia's Misery. Support FFF. Sign up for The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. Having some technical problems today, so I'm kind of winging it. That's all right. Damn, it's hot in here. All right.
Okay, I gotta cover Ukraine here in a second. Oh man, I got so much important news here. I better quit lecturing and get to it here. Let me just give you a rundown. So much stuff going on. Where the hell's my cursor, man? I got too many windows. All right. First of all, from McClatchy. Let me run this thing here real quick. I'm a trying and I'm a failing at the same time. Run only. Just this one time. All right. Okay, so, hope that works. All right, from McClatchy, our friend John Lande, U.S. intelligence chief bars unauthorized contacts with reporters on all intel-related matters. Intelligence chief forbids unauthorized talks with reporters. Is this the same article with two headlines? No, one's a follow-up to the other, I ain't sure. But anyway, and I haven't read either of them, to be perfectly honest. But here's what's going on, they're freaking. This is part of that same insider threat program that Lande and his associates at McClatchy covered back a few months ago, they're really playing out Julian Assange's manifesto exactly as he meant for it to be. Start leaking these guys' secrets, and they will clamp down on secrecy so hard that they'll be clamping down on themselves. And they'll be making it impossible for them to carry out their various conspiracies against us. And I think, you know, he's not an anarchist, and his theory is that, if the government was just doing what it was supposed to do, it wouldn't need all this secrecy, and a leak now and then would only be beneficial and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. The problem, of course, is that the state, especially the U.S. empire, they are nothing but a gigantic conspiracy. That's what Congress is. Just like the bumper sticker, right? This is where the bankers, the arms dealers, the farmers, the pill pushers, the insurance companies, the old people in Israel all meet to plot to take things away from you with a gun to your head and then go and spend that money pointing more guns at more people's heads, mostly. And oftentimes pulling the triggers on those guns, too. That's what the U.S. state is. It's that giant evil secret society you've been looking for. It's the empire. And it's horrible. And so what Assange said in his big manifesto was, all we got to do is start leaking some leaks, and they will clamp down within their own system on their own secrets, but that will, of course, nullify from within their ability to get away with the terrible things that it is that they're trying to do with us that they need all that secrecy for in the freaking first place. And so how is any good bureaucrat supposed to destroy our lives all day when they're too busy stabbing each other in the back? Hey, federal bureaucrat, that guy at the cubicle next to you can't be trusted. You better watch him extra. Ooh, he doesn't like that very much, does he? Sounds like a guilty conscience to me. Yeah, that's right. Let's get some checks and balances going here. Ambition, said James Madison, must be made to counteract ambition. And so let these rats all stab each other in the back to the point where they all have to just go and quit and get real jobs. Because they can't get away with oppressing us anymore. Because there are just too many rats from within. Too many people afraid of the rats within to do the things their bosses are trying to get them to do. And so now, not only is it supposed to be a crime and a problem for national security state employees to leak classified information to the press, they are hereby ordered to no longer leak anything to anyone ever again, even if it's not classified. I like how they do the underscore at instead of italics or something. At McClatchy, D.C., employees of U.S. intelligence agencies have been barred from discussing any intelligence-related matter, even if it isn't classified, with journalists without authorization. Now, this is a real problem for free speech. I don't mean to praise it, but I just mean to point at it as a symptom of the dysfunction of the state. They are taking themselves on, destroying themselves now with their internal clampdowns. And this isn't going to hold, or it's not going to be enforceable. It also, you know what, I don't know. I don't mean to downplay it. I guess it's possible this will never be rolled back. And maybe we should take this. Maybe I shouldn't be too flip about it. Maybe we should take this as a real important marker on our road to a total state here in the U.S. where literally executive branch employees are just forbidden from talking to reporters at all anymore, unless it's the official spokesman of whatever department saying exactly what they're supposed to officially spokes. That's who we, as they call it, are now. That's what our society is now. It's not just them, it's us. It's all of us. That's what our country has become. And, you know, maybe it'll stick and maybe it won't, but the fact that they're even trying this is, I mean, this is really huge. I mean, you see, I mean, maybe you don't quite get it. The point is, they're trying to destroy journalism forever. You see, they're trying to destroy journalism. They're trying to make it impossible for executive branch employees to explain what's going on to reporters, even off the record. Look, here's what's going on in the background. You can't even tell them the unclassified stuff now. And then, of course, more blowback. Because what does this mean? This means that Americans, because it is to a teeny tiny little bitty degree true that it's we the people that occupy those government offices. I mean, I tend to think of the state as some alien force that might as well work for Putin as much as they care about actually securing our life and liberty. But the staff at all those institutions, they're our friends and neighbors, admit it, it's true. And so they can do the right thing, and they don't have to do like Snowden and leak all the best stuff, although please go right ahead. But I think more and more what's going to happen is people are going to start leaking. It's going to be worse for the national security state. In other words, maybe instead of talking to a reporter, they're just going to go ahead and upload all the documents to Assange's website. Are they going to go ahead and upload all the documents to The Intercept at firstlook.com, etc., like that? And so, you know, I guess we'll see how it goes. But, boy, talk about overreach, man. I think that's overreaching big time. All right. Oh, and then from Egypt. Sorry, I'm jumping around here, a little domestic, a little foreign. But from McClatchy, D.C., an Egyptian lawyer and TV personality who declared days ago that he was running for president pulled out of the race Saturday. And state media quoted him as saying he had received a sign from God that victory belonged to former army chief Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Yeah, former. Murtada Mansour, known for his outspoken style and sometimes eccentric views, also took a parting swipe at the only Sisi opponent left in the race, leftist politician Hamdin Sabahi, the Aram website reported. Mansour, which isn't that John Stewart's buddy over there? Yeah, he got a sign from God. You want us to torture you and everybody you care about? Okay, good. Then enough of this pretending that there's a real election going on here. You're done. You wonder why they hate us. When we don't support suicide bomber jihadists in their neighborhoods, we support military dictators that turn them into suicide bomber jihadists that we'll later support as soon as they cross the border and go somewhere else. Remember, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, bad. Al-Qaeda in Iraq in Syria, good. And where'd Al-Qaeda come from in the first place? The torture of Ayman al-Zawahiri. That's where it came from. He knew a guy who was in on the assassination of Sadat. So then Mubarak had him tortured. So then he became Ayman al-Zawahiri. Terrorist leader. Mass murderer of American citizens. You'd think maybe there's a lesson in here somewhere. I don't know. Maybe not. All right. So let's see. We got big police state stuff. And Ukraine on the other side of this break. And then Trevor Tim is going to be on. I guess I should do Ukraine first, then police state, because that'll lead into the Trevor Tim interview. So here, before we at least try this break, I guess we'll see what happens here with the audio quality. We've had an update. But here, real quick, how much time do I have? None? 45 seconds? I got 45 seconds, I believe. So let me tell you about this. Getting the facts straight on law enforcement in the West Bank. This is at 972mag.com, and he's pointing out this article at Vox about this faulty analysis of who gets arrested by the occupation forces in Palestine. And the idiots at Vox didn't discriminate as to who's responsible for arresting who. So he goes, wow, it looks like more Israelis are arrested than Palestinians by the IDF. Yeah, that's because the Palestinian Internal Security Services take care of arresting intra-Palestinian crimes, or alleged ones. They only get the Palestinians for daring to resist Israeli settler encroachment and that kind of thing. So, in other words, apples, oranges, your numbers mean nothing. Vox. And then, Vox. Oh, Kansas watches more porn than any other state in the union. Look at these numbers. No. That's just IP-based geolocation default switching this, that, the other thing that has nothing to do. Yeah, again, data ain't knowledge. Why don't you pick up the phone and do some journalism, you idiots? Male doctors get $50,000 more annually for Medicare than female doctors do. Yeah? So what? So what does that mean? Is Vox a hoax? Is that what this is supposed to be, a hoax? We give you data, meaningless data, all day long, and we pretend it means things. Vox.com. Click, click, click. Ching, ching, ching.
Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1-ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, Al Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement, featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more. The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty, and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and dip that down because it sounds absolutely horrible. Yeah, well, you know, we're working on it. It sounds like a latency issue or, some kind of software glitch. Different things are talking at different bit rates or something. Something's going on. I think we got rid of that kind of Pringles can sound, though, right? Nobody wants to do radio from the bottom of a Pringles can. Not even a really big Pringles can. But no, I do think it's important. I'm not really the brain to discuss this kind of thing in a very useful way, really. I'm about Vox.com myself, I suppose. But data isn't information. And information isn't knowledge. And knowledge isn't wisdom. And so, therefore, because of the rules of geometry and stuff, then that means that data ain't wisdom. And a website full of endless data without any sense. I mean, I guess I won't deny they try to make some sense of it. But what they're doing, they don't really have any knowledge or wisdom to impart to any of the data that they have. Or what they do is just a bunch of conventional wisdom and crap. And they're not doing any other part of what it takes to do journalism. Right? So if the data say that more people masturbate in Kansas than anywhere else in the nation by a factor of 1,000, then maybe the data ain't quite all you need to know. Maybe, and there are some pretty severe CIA plots going on in Kansas. No, that's in Iowa, right? No, I don't know what's going on in Kansas. Anyway, they had to admit later that we don't know what we're talking about. Yeah, we're stupid idiots here. This is just apparently explained by the vagaries of IP-based geolocations, where undefined locales default to the center of the country, right? So if you live in Peoria and you giggle a Google a movie, then it says, oh, where's this movie playing in your town, right? You can change your Google settings to not take note of where you are if you don't want it to guess where you are. And you can, and I guess various ISPs are set different ways. And so if it's not 100% obvious, then they just dump you at a convenient switch in the center of a country. They give you an IP as though you're in Kansas, because what difference does it make anyway? That's all. So the entire article was wrong, because the entire article was based just on data. No information, certainly no knowledge, no follow-up, no context, no phone calls to people who may have some light to shed on this data. Just data. Well, the data say that more school children, more young girls go to school in Afghanistan now than in the year 2000. Well, maybe that's all we need to know. And maybe it's not. I love this one. Well, you know, it's really important when it comes down to, you know, the West Bank, where they're sitting here pretending, really, that settlers get arrested by the IDF. Or, you know, settlers are arrested on the West Bank and taken to prison or jail more often than Palestinians. No, man, you're just excluding an entire giant set of numbers. Why don't you pick up a phone? Never even mind calling a Palestinian, why don't you just call some liberal Israeli Jews, like over at the 972 mag? They'll explain it to you. And then male doctors get more annually from Medicare than female doctors. Yeah, but so what does that mean? What does that mean? They say here, well, maybe they work longer hours. Yeah, maybe they work longer hours. Why is that news? What are you talking about? This is supposed to be the biggest new thing in media? Ooh, eat your heart out, Glenn Greenwald, and First Look Media, The Intercept, and all your context. Why, here are digits on a page that mean nothing. Vox.com. What a... Who are these people? How come people so inferior to me are so much more successful than me? Wait, maybe it's because they're so much more inferior to me. Maybe if I was Ezra Klein, and maybe if I didn't know anything, maybe if I thought that meaningless numbers at random on paper meant that whatever the Democrats' policy is probably smart or whatever, I guess I could do just fine. Right? I'd have made so much money working for the Washington Post, I could retire at, you know, 35 or however old Ezra Klein is, 40. and go make my own Vox, where all day we talk about data, but not what any of it means or why anyone should care at all in the first place. Oh, look, everyone, born-again Christians watch more gay porn than anyone else. Really? Really? Oh, okay, you hate born-again Christians, and you just like the sound of that being so funny, but are you sure there's not more gay porn being watched in Miami? Or, say, I don't know, West Hollywood? Than in Kansas? And I don't know, maybe there's some really gay parts of some towns in Kansas. I'm not from Kansas, but I'm just saying. That's their whole point, is, yeah, the more Baptist you are, the more into gay porn you are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Until you do 10 minutes investigation into your stupid statistics you've come up with here. Look at me. Sticking up for the Baptist today. Well, they're being attacked by retards. All right, and now, I'm sorry, what a waste, man. I'm supposed to be talking about Ukraine here. How America Lost Vladimir Putin by David Rode and Arshad Mohammed at theatlantic.com. Read this. It's really good. He'll be on the show later in the week, I guess. He's had to cancel on me twice now, so maybe three times he'll piss me off. But I still hope to talk to this guy. In both cases, he had perfectly good excuses, you know. Can't lie. Bob Perry, he wrote this thing about libertarians being a bunch of slave owners like Thomas Jefferson. What are you talking about, dude? It's so stupid. And I can't get over how completely stupid that was. And yet, I gotta admit, I still love Bob Perry. And when he's not writing the dumbest thing that any liberal idiot ever wrote about libertarianism, I mean, seriously, if you take everything at Salon and Alternet.com written about libertarians in the last 10 years, Robert Perry's piece about how we're all a bunch of slave owners is the lowest of all of them. That's how completely stupid it was. It was so stupid that Robert Perry should have been blasted out of a trebuchet, a really, really, really big one, into the sun. And yet, I can't help but love this guy, and he does such good work on American support for Nazis in Ukraine. It was so funny. I follow this one conventional wisdom Obama-loving Democrat, just one, on Twitter that somehow I stumbled across and who is a reliable weather vane for everything Obama-loving. And they tweeted a picture of these Nazis in Missouri who are rallying around this scumbag murderer from the who shot the people outside of the Jewish community centers last week. And so I was joking around. These guys are clearly American Nazis in Missouri. But I was joking around and said, are you sure that those guys aren't Obama's right sector Nazis that he used to overthrow the government of Ukraine? And the tweet that I got back was, you're blocked for saying that. Oh, tiny little Obama bots. Please don't cry when Robert Perry, who is the most liberal Democrat out of all of y'all. And you know what? I don't know everything about Robert Perry, but my understanding of Robert Perry is that he is not a communist. He is not a socialist. He's not a leftist. He's not a Trotskyite. He may call himself a progressive, but I think of him as, you know, other than his caring about human rights and stuff, as a pretty run-of-the-mill kind of a liberal. But he's good on the Nazis there, and boy, the Obama bots hate that and crying their eyes out over it. You should have seen it. It's not too late. Go to twitter.com/Scott Horton Show. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quotes, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
Yikes. God, that sounds terrible, man. I don't know why. I don't think Well, anyway, we're going to screw around with it after the show. See if we can make it a little bit better for you for tomorrow. I don't know. Oh, well. Who cares? I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our guest on the show today is Trevor Tim from the Freedom of the Press Foundation. He sits on the board there with the likes of Glenn Greenwald, Daniel Ellsberg, Edward Snowden. Holy, yeah, they do good work over there. He also writes for The Guardian. He's formerly, you guys know Trevor, he's formerly of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Writes at The Guardian. This one is called The Mentality of J. Edgar Hoover's FBI Undergirds Today's Surveillance State. One of them... British newspaper written headlines there. Welcome back to the show. Trevor, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me back.
Good. Very happy to have you here. And so I like the way, I like this article, and I like the way it starts out with the new movie, 1971, which I haven't seen yet, but I can't wait. And I guess people know that it was just, a month or 6 weeks ago, something like that, that the individuals, or at least some of them, who liberated... Media Pennsylvania FBI papers in 1971 were revealed, and then that led to the COINTELPRO revelations and eventually the Church Committee and all the rest of that. And so there's so many important lessons to take from there. But first of all, I guess the single most important lesson was the mendacity of J. Edgar Hoover as it was exposed in those leaks. And just what he was able to get away with, how far it was possible for the former head of the FBI to go. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anybody has a chance to see the documentary 1971, I really encourage you to do so. It's just an incredible, amazing story. You know, we think of J. Edgar Hoover these days as somebody who completely overstepped the bounds of the law, who was perhaps one of the most powerful men in the history of the country. You know, he ran the FBI for 50 years in almost complete secrecy with no oversight. You know, presidents themselves were afraid of him. The Media Pennsylvania files, when these burglars first broke into this FBI office, J. Edgar Hoover was still looked at as this saintly figure in American life, you know, beyond criticism. And what it revealed was that the FBI had been conducting these mass surveillance programs where they were spying and surveilling and harassing and trying to intimidate anti-war activists, civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King Jr., African-American college students across the country. You know, the FBI's mission back then, it seemed, was to infiltrate any form of dissent in the country and disrupt it. And they used all sorts of dirty tricks that went well beyond the law and the Constitution. And without these burglars, we may have never found out about it.
Right, yeah. And in fact... And we'll get back to the FBI and all this here in a second, but that goes to a recent article that you wrote beseeching people inside the national security state, inside the Senate, whoever, if they're able to go ahead and leak the torture report, since the government has made it so clear, executive and legislative both, that they never mean to release more than the executive summary, and they're even going to let the CIA participate in blacking out what ought to be included or discluded from the executive summary.
Yeah, absolutely. It just goes to show you time and time again, the American public only learn about what the government does behind closed doors, and especially when they're engaged in wrongdoing or illegal acts. The only way they ever find out about it is through leaks to journalists. The same thing happened with the Media Pennsylvania burglars. You know, they had to break the law to get this information to journalists for the American public to find out. Now, you will not find a single person willing to criticize these burglars today. You know, this happened 40 years ago under Richard Nixon's administration, and yet we know they broke the law. Yet these same people will go after the likes of Edward Snowden for leaking information about the NSA that hopefully will lead to similar types of reforms that happened in the 1970s. So it just goes to show you how time can kind of heal all wounds in this case. And, you know, it's just the prime example of how, you know, our democracy needs leaks to survive.
Yeah, for sure. And, I've spoken with Daniel Ellsberg, your fellow board member there at the Freedom of the Press Foundation, for years and years about, where he would beg people on the air. I try to give him a chance every interview to directly address government employees and ask them that, come on, you have to do the right thing. You got people out there willing to die for the Karzai regime in Afghanistan. They're brave enough for that. They ought to be brave enough to risk a few years in the pen in order to, if it comes to that, in order to tell the truth to the American people about crimes that their government is committing in their name. It's not like, we're talking about things that are legitimately debatable here. We're talking about the torture report. We're talking about, for example, the Afghan war logs or the Iraq war logs, the State Department cables. The people have a right to know this stuff. And government employees who go on and just pretend like it doesn't matter, or they refuse to take the risk themselves to actually do this, for the American people, they're doing the wrong thing. They're basically what government employees would call accessories if it was a private citizen doing it, helping to cover up for someone else's crime. You would be an accessory after the fact, Trevor, if you were helping Clapper tap my phone without a warrant, right? And so, you know, it seems to me like when they make it so clear that, no, we're never going to release the 6,300-page report, then one of them, with or without authorization, has to. And they all have, in fact, they can go right to your website and upload it in safety and anonymity there, real encrypted anonymity there. Isn't that right?
Yeah, well, so we run this software program called SecureDrop, which is basically a whistleblower submission system, much like what WikiLeaks pioneered 5 years ago, where you can upload documents in a much more safe and secure manner than getting documents to somebody through email or even through the physical mail. And we don't actually operate it ourselves on our website, but there are half a dozen news organizations which we have installed it at, including The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald's new publication, ProPublica, Forbes, The New Yorker, and we are very encouraging of leaks because, as you just said, you know, this stuff often just does not see the light of day without it. You know, the government naturally recoils when people demand that they release information showing that they have engaged in wrongdoing. So it's like pulling teeth getting it to them to release it officially, and so we have to, unfortunately, get it through these unofficial channels, and that now requires a very brave and courageous person to put their job and life on the line to get the American public this information, much like Edward Snowden did, because as we've seen, the government will go to extreme lengths to plug leaks. You know, just this week, there was this crazy policy that was implemented by the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. He said that any intelligence employee, which is involves like 17 agencies and who knows how many tens of thousands of people, they are not allowed to talk to reporters even about unclassified information related to their job. So you could talk to, if you're one of these employees, you could talk to your neighbor about what you do in your job in unclassified settings, but if your neighbor is a reporter, you are then banned from doing so, and you could potentially be fired or lose your security clearance for doing so. And this is just going to hurt the American public in so many ways when it comes to learning about what their government is doing, because oftentimes these employees that are filling in the gaps of information, you know, being much more truthful than the official line on who knows how many subjects, and it just goes to show you how much we need people to step forward and be brave and be courageous. to get us this type of information when it's going to be available to us less and less.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? These are the people who say for any individual citizen to want to maintain their privacy is basically suspicious. That if you don't have anything to hide, then what are you so worried about? And yet, boy, are they just wearing their guilt all over their sleeve when it comes to their secrecy, when they're supposed to be our servants and accountable to us and to the laws passed by our democratic representatives and all this hooey that they teach us in junior high. And yet... They will go to the most ridiculous lengths, actually, I think is the only way to describe that. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine, Trevor, that'll last. That can't last. Not in America where with a rule like that. But then again, I can't really imagine them revoking it either. So I don't know. It seems pretty out of control.
Yeah, it's kind of this conundrum we're in where, you know, the government wants to hold on to information as tightly as possible, but technology and people's mindsets have really changed to the point where people demand transparency and technology makes it easier. And so hopefully the government will learn eventually. I mean, it hasn't yet, but that they are going to need to be transparent because they're going to get transparency either way.
All right, now, back to your article here about the mentality of J. Edgar Hoover, not just the mentality, but his agency, too, their role in this. I've thought over the last almost year now since the Snowden revelations came out that the FBI agents, you know, they must be kind of either snickering to each other or maybe kind of nervously laughing that the NSA is getting all this attention because, hey, that's where Snowden was a contractor. He didn't get the goods on the FBI, but they are the mirror image of the National Security Agency when it comes to spying on Americans. And I've been thinking about this for the last 9 months. I've been picturing an FBI spook with his trench coat, with his hands in his pockets, whistling like, nothing to see here kind of thing. Everybody just keep on, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just over here, you know, tricking people into doing terrorist attacks. You know, pay no mind to me. But they've got a hell of a lot of power when it comes to scooping up our data, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've imagined the same scenario over and over again the last 9 months. You know, the NSA gets all the attention. I mean, rightly, the NSA has been doing some absolutely incredible types of surveillance, not just the Americans, but not just the American public, but the rest of the world. But it's the FBI that really is the agency that will affect American civil liberties when it comes down to it. The FBI has many more powers to look into Americans than the NSA ever will, despite what the NSA can do now. And, you know, we always forget that when you look at the court orders that Edward Snowden released, it's not just the NSA that's named. It's also the FBI. The FBI is doing the NSA's dirty work. So whenever you hear about the NSA colluding with a company, whether it's a tech company or a telecommunications company, and this company says, no, actually, we didn't give anything to the NSA. That's because they actually gave it to the FBI. The FBI acts as the NSA's go-between to all these American companies, so these American companies can have plausible deniability when reporters come to them and ask them what their relationship with the NSA is. And so, you know, the FBI is doing just as much as the NSA does, but they're actually doing more because they have more power. You know, they're the ones that have the power to wiretap people in the United States. They're the ones that are asking for a new wiretapping law that will give them a back door into all of our internet service providers like Google and Facebook. They're the ones that are asking judges for more authority to actually hack people to get information from them. And they're the ones that have continually showed that there is this culture of abuse going on in the system. You know, people like to point out that the NSA has not been found to have systematically abused the powers. Well, the NSA has had national security letters for, you know, over a dozen years now, and there has been government report after government report saying they have been systematically abusing these national security letters to get all sorts of information on people they never should have gotten, and the problems are never fixed. You know, these reports came out in three straight years, like 2008, 2009, 2010, and it's just amazing that they're given this oversight-free power, and they can continue to abuse them and not face any repercussions for it.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, it's such a red herring, as you're well aware, I know, it's such a red herring of them to say that, oh, well, you know, we have a couple of instances of abuse of the NSA, even just as far as that goes, where, okay, one guy spied on his girlfriend twice, or however they want to characterize it. The entire thing is illegal, and I don't care what Congress says. It's the Fourth Amendment that says it's illegal. And in fact, the Congress, the guy that wrote the Patriot Act, says that they're basically just lying about what Section 215 says. Section 215 does not say that you can do that, and you're in violation of the law by pretending that it does and doing it anyway, these general warrants. And so these specific instances of abuse are beside the point. Barack Obama is just as guilty of violating the Fourth Amendment as George Bush.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't, you know, when I said that about NSA abuse, I should definitely say that I don't believe that the NSA has an abuse of powers. Its power itself is definitely an abuse, you know?
Yeah, and no, I'm sorry, because I wasn't trying to correct you. I just wanted to point that out about how they
it's an excellent point, sure.
But yeah, I mean, this whole thing, in fact, this is what I wanted to ask you too, was the national security letter, that means a cop writes himself a warrant and goes and serves it, does whatever he wants, as long as he can call it a business record or whatever it is. But then I wonder, well, wait a minute, I'm not sure of the numbers of all the different sections that do this, that, and the other thing. Would that be the same business record section, Section 215? And so then does that mean that there's such a thing as a general national security letter where the FBI can just go, FISA court or not, or whatever, they can just go and do mass collection, just like the NSA, of many, many people based on one NSL?
Well, that's the problem. You know, we don't really know the full scope of what they're doing with Section 215. You know, we do know that with national security letters before, they have tried this. You know, there was a situation in 2006 or 2007 where they basically took one national security letter and got thousands of people's hotel records in Las Vegas. You know, they could be using Section 215 as essentially a super national security letter. It's entirely possible, unfortunately, and many things are possible beyond what is in the plain language of the statute, as we've learned over the past year. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important that Congress clarify what's going on with this law, because it's clear that the NSA and the FBI think they can just go behind closed doors and do whatever they want with it, no matter what it says. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a real problem. Not just for people's privacy, but for democracy, given the fact that we're supposed to be a country that passes public laws based on public opinion, whereas in this situation, it's been the complete opposite.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got this upper respiratory thing. Oh, man. A terrible timing, Trevor. Oh, God. There's so much more going on here, too. Let me make sure I've given you a chance to talk about the FBI's role in the spying as much as possible, as much as you need here, too, before. I mean, and it's in your article, so it's not too far afield, but there's so much going on about biometric surveillance, and I don't know if you saw the thing in The Atlantic about the Gorgon Stare over Compton, California, and all these kinds of things that I want to get into with you here also.
Yeah, I mean, the FBI just has so many tools in its tool belt now. You know, there was a Supreme Court case called U.S. versus Jones that got decided 2 years ago, which said the FBI couldn't attach a GPS tracker to somebody's car without a warrant. So what they've done since then is basically make all their surveillance secret. They won't release anything via Freedom of Information Act, and they have all sorts of tools like drones that they've been using. They won't tell us how many they're using for surveillance. The EFF just released this new information that they received, saying the FBI has this new next generation facial recognition program that will have as many as 52 million photographs in it next year, which includes millions of people who have never committed a crime. You know, we've seen them use what are called Stingray devices, which are basically fake cell phone towers, which will suck up, you know, thousands of people's cell phone activity within a given area, and we'll be able to pinpoint you inside your home, potentially.
And they've been giving those out to the local cops, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This isn't just the FBI. These are local cops are getting grants for this all over the country, and they're using them in secrecy, you know, sometimes not even telling judges what they're doing. And judges are obviously getting angry at this, because they're just completely keeping everything secret so that they can resist oversight, which is, again, the pattern that we've seen come back again and again. They're basically taking the NSA's tactics of doing all this stuff in secret and applying it domestically, and, you know, the people who are really going to lose are the ordinary law-abiding citizens whose civil liberties get violated while the government goes on these fishing expeditions with, you know, everybody's picture, a drone flying overhead, a stingray sucking up everybody's information, or the FBI trying to get the encryption keys from an email service like Lavabit that could expose everybody to surveillance. And it's really high time the FBI get reined in, just as the NSA hopefully will be soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. It's funny, you know, there's this piece in Tom Dispatch today by Todd Miller about the border security state, which I'm sure you're well aware. It's what the ACLU calls the Constitution-free zone is now 100 miles, which is two-thirds of the American people, are within 100 miles of either the sea or Canada or Mexico. And within those regions, the Border Patrol police have you know, that much more leeway to violate people's rights, and including with electronic surveillance and all this kind of stuff. But at the core of his essay is an electronics expo, a border security gadget expo. And the point of that, at least I'm trying to make, is not so much about the corruption of it, but just sort of the dirty snowball rolling downhill kind of thing, where there's just no talking businessmen out of this market. With if the U.S. government is clamping down, in this case, on the border like this, then any gadget you can think of to help hunt and track and trap Mexicans, you could get a government contract. You know, you should get some investors, and you should work on this. And there's no morality to it. There's no national interest to it, or whatever. It's just a businessman saying, well, I've got a gadget that'll do facial recognition. I've got a gadget that will, you know, serve as an electronic fence, and with my fancy sensors and this and that. And it's just that the border homeland security state, just like the national security state and the rest of it, it's just there with its own industrial complex, its own built-in set of conflicts of interest, its own unions full of employees who want their overtime pay, and all of these things. And it's just almost to imagine our old culture and our old Bill of Rights being able to stop it now. It's just, it's going so fast. There's so many people who mean well, who are just, they get up in the morning, they do their work, which is going to the expo to try to sell their Lockheed products to Uncle Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the border issues about civil liberties are incredibly serious. Those are some that often fly under the radar. The fact that you can be stopped and the Fourth Amendment doesn't seem to apply when you're going through airports is, you know, a huge problem for a lot of people, especially people of Muslim descent who are stopped all the time in airports, detained for hours despite being accused of no wrongdoing or having absolutely no evidence of wrongdoing. You know, there was a great on the media segment about this a few weeks ago where they dedicated their whole program to stories of people who have had this happen to them. And, you know, unfortunately, there probably won't be any change unless people really start contacting their member of Congress or forcing their member of Congress out of office who support these policies, and we can get new policies in place so that American civil liberties are protected both inside the country and on the borders.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing is, ultimately, there are 300 million of us, and there's only so many who either work for the Homeland Security State or an associated company or have any direct interest in this. And virtually all the rest of us are their victims. And so when it comes down to numbers and political power, if we can get our priorities straight, free people ought to be able to win on this and be able to succeed in pushing back you know, at least the worst of this stuff, at least for a time. You know, I shouldn't push hopelessness on people. I don't mean to, Trevor. But I am scared. I mean, honestly, you know, did you see the new RoboCop movie? It's terrible. It's so bad. And they took all of the great satire and humor and dystopianism and everything out of it, and yet they have they show you what total information awareness on a city level at least can look like in practice, where video camera is tied into the central database, to all the biometric data, to all of the other databases that show whose telephones have ever called each other, and so who is associated with each other in any of these ways. And they're showing it's only barely in the future kind of thing as far as the software and the computer power to really be able to do it that well. And then it's just like I always joked, is coming true. Did you see in the news where the IRS is already buying the license plate data. The IRS is getting tied in to this total information awareness down to your neighborhood enforcement level, where sooner or later, if we don't do something to turn it around, you'll literally have that motorcycle cop pulling you over for being behind on your federal taxes. You know, it's becoming like that. And that's going to be, and again, you know, it's just, I don't even mean to make it sound so purposeful, because I think it's just kind of, it's like a white lie. It's like just the conflict of interest, the dirty snowball rolling downhill. So many people's livelihoods depend on continuing to make it more and more and more this way, and they're the people who have most of the power and authority in the first place, and so far they seem to be getting their way. It's gotten a lot further than I think some of us ever thought it would, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think fortunately, we are in a unique moment here where we actually have a chance to really create some major change and get us back to the First and Fourth Amendment principles that so many people hold dear, you know, given the fact that Edward Snowden has made surveillance a national issue and has really forced a lot of members of Congress on the record about this. And, you know, there's an election coming up in a few months, and people are going to have the option or ability to make this an election issue. And if they can do that, then we have a real chance to force a little change here.
Right. Yeah, I think this window of time is really important. As long as these revelations continue to be published, this is our chance to really make a change. And you're doing such great work along these lines. I really appreciate it, and I really appreciate your time on the show as always, Trevor.
Ah, thanks. It's always fun.
And sorry for keeping you over here. We got to go, everybody. That's Trevor Tim. He's at theguardian.com and at the Freedom of the Press Foundation. Bye.